Today, did the end of the world just get postponed? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, welcome to the latest posts covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Something happened late last week, which superficially might be attributed to positive news on the US-China trade talks, later downplayed by Trump. But it was wider and more significant than that. In recent months, many traders have been positioning for a significant market correction and potentially a US or global recession. Thus, risk stocks were downplayed, while bonds and gold were all the rage. This drove the yields on bonds down to the point where in several countries like Germany they went negative, and at its peak, it was estimated that around $17 trillion worth of bonds were effectively underwater. A couple of weeks back, we pointed out that gold had shot ahead of itself and that the gold futures meant it would fall. And it did. Down by more than $30 an ounce. The US Treasury 10-year yield rose on Friday to 1.94%, up nearly 50 basis points from the lows at the end of August. Remember that the Fed cut its interest rate twice by, guess what, 50 basis points, and short-term Treasury yields have fallen by about that much. With the one-month yield now down to 1.56% and the 10-year yield up at 1.94%, the yield curve has uninverted and steepened. Recession has been postponed, at least for now. Those rates, of course, are still very low and well below inflation, as measured by the US core inflation of 2.4%. But remember that bond yields and prices move in opposite directions. So those buying in at negative yields when prices were high, now looking at significant losses. And these yield adjustments are not just in the US. The rise in long-term yields, despite ultra-low or negative short-term yields, has been reverberating around the markets internationally. For example, in the Eurozone, where the ECB in September cut its deposit rate deeper into the negative, long-term yields have risen across the board. The German 10-year yield rose to minus 0.26% on Friday, up nearly 50 basis points from the lows at the end of August. And the 20-year yield became positive just at 0.03%, and it's pushed the 30-year yield further into the positive. And Germany's 30-year bond is interesting in that they tried to sell them at a negative yield of minus 0.11% on August 21st, with a 0% coupon. So no interest payments for 30 years and at a premium in order to achieve the negative yield of minus 0.11%. While 2 billion euros of these bonds were offered back in August, only 824 million euros were sold, and those investors may rue the day they bought. The French 10-year yield transitioned into positive on Thursday for the first time since July and closed on Friday at up 0.023%, almost up 50 basis points from minus 0.45% at the end of August. The Spanish 10-year yield, which had come close to zero at the end of August, rose to 0.39% by Friday, and the Belgium 10-year yield, which had dropped as low as minus 0.38% at the end of August, turned positive on Thursday for the first time since July and closed on Friday with a yield of 0.02%, up 40 basis points from August. The Italian 10-year yield, which never made it into negative territory despite the ECB's best endeavours, rose 30 basis points from 0.82% in early September to 1.18% on Friday. And in Switzerland, the first country to actually sell new 10-year bonds with a negative yield in April 2015, the 10-year yield had come down to minus 1.10% on August the 16th and has since moved back 70 basis points to minus 0.4%. For those buyers, the annual yield will be minus 1.1% until they get rid of those bonds. But now the bonds are also losing value, and if those August buyers want to sell the bonds, they will also have to take a capital loss. And in Japan, the second largest government bond market in the world, the 10-year yield has risen from minus 0.29% at the end of August to minus 0.06% now. The Japanese yen, often sought out in times of stress, weakened beyond 109 per dollar and is about 1% lower this week against the greenback. And bonds in the Asia-Pacific region also retreated on Friday, with Japan's benchmark bond yield poised for its biggest weekly jump in more than 6 years. So how much of that $17 trillion of negative bonds remains now? Well, according to Bloomberg, negative yield debt peaked at $17.03 trillion on August the 29th, but has fallen by $5 trillion now, or by 30%, to $11.94 trillion as at last Friday. And that's the lowest amount since June. And locally, the bank bill swap rate, a critical interbank rate, is rising, having fallen since earlier in the year, suggesting more pressure on local bank margins to boot. And we also know that governments and corporates around the world are issuing more debt bonds, so they may have to offer these at higher rates to attract investors. And this then touches on the whole question of negative rates, because the ECB, the Bank of Japan, and the Swiss National Bank have all said that negative interest rates weaken banks. Central banks have had to consider special measures to insulate banks from some of these effects. And of course, the real story is their corrosive impact on the real economy. Asset bubbles get bigger, and risk is all but priced away, which, if you think about it, is nuts. Investors should be taking those risks in a capitalist system. Risk versus reward. Which takes us to the real issue. There are two fronts to the current financial mess we're in. First, the real economy, which is weak and weakening, and the financial system, which is being supported by more life support measures. Bloomberg last week reported that analysts at JP Morgan Chase & Co. said the Federal Reserve could design a permanent tool that could unlock, quote, a significant fraction of cash currently held by larger banks to prevent funding stresses. The central bank could create a standing repurchase agreement facility that would be accessible to all depository institutions and included as a source of liquidity for resolution planning. This, they say, would free up cash that is currently held by the banks for regulatory purposes and allow reserves to be more evenly distributed through the banking system. JP Morgan, which is America's largest bank and one of the biggest players in the repo market, was among those that blamed post-financial crisis bank regulations as one of the factors behind September's turmoil in funding markets. Chief Executive Officer Jamie Dimon told analysts on October the 15th that while the bank had the cash, regulation prevented it from using it to calm the repo market. That upheaval briefly sent the rate on overnight repurchase agreements spiraling to around 10% and raised questions about the Fed's ability to control its main policy lever, the Fed funds rate. The spike prompted the Fed to step in with temporary repo market operations that are still expected to run through to January and to boost bank reserves through the purchase of Treasury bills, so QE, like it or not. The US Central Bank has been studying the idea of a standing repo facility for some time, Chairman Jerome Powell said at a news conference after Wednesday's Federal Open Market Committee meeting. But there are other technical things the central bank could look at that would make the liquidity, quote, move more freely without compromising the soundness of the system. Even with the steps taken so far by the Fed, the market remains susceptible to upward pressures on repo rates. And on Thursday, with month-end financing needs and Treasury auction settlements added into the mix, rates were above the recently lowered central bank target for Fed funds, and the Fed's most recent term operations all have been oversubscribed, suggesting that there is a thirst for liquidity from the central bank. The bank's inability to police the repo market in September wasn't a lack of access to cash, but restrictions in their ability to deploy it, JP Morgan said. But hold on. The big banks are seeking ever more support from the central bank to prop up the too big to fail banking system and to negate the capital they need to hold. To me, this signals that whilst we might have seen the end of the world postponed for a bit, unless the focus shifts from life support to the banking system to life support for the real economy, the inevitable has only been postponed for as long as the Fed continues to pump more liquidity into the system. Of course, the real issue is to separate the core banking activities of lending and depositing from the speculative activities of investment banking. Central banks have a role in facilitating financial stability in the former, whereas risks relating to investment activities should be taken by their investors, which is why a modern Glass-Steagall separation is an essential first step to sorting this out. Something which, of course, bankers will resist to their last breath, simply because superior returns are made from speculative investment activities, especially when supported by central banks. But this does not help the real economy or real businesses and households. This is the structural issue at the heart of the world's end. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.